Oh, that's right. It's Wednesday afternoon. Yes, it's Wednesday afternoon. It always messes you up when you have a holiday like Monday, Memorial Day.
Exactly.
But I am so glad to have Gary Burgess here with us. He is running for Superintendent of Education for the state, the great state of South Carolina. And, of course, you're from, do you live in Anderson?
I do live in Anderson, in Pendleton, in fact.
Pendleton, yeah, that's a nice area over there. So how you doing today, Gary?
And I'm doing great, a great drive down, and I'm excited to be back with you again.
Absolutely. So, you know, you're on the school board. That's an interesting place to be and to be running for a superintendent of education. The school board always seems kind of in the middle of things on a local level, don't they?
Exactly. It's a place where you try to make sure schools are getting what they need to do what needs to be done and getting the resources need from other entities. So it is a strange kind of good kind of place to be.
Absolutely. Well, you certainly have done a whole lot of things. You've been on a lot of big committees, done a lot of good stuff. Why don't you just give us a little rundown on your accomplishments?
My accomplishments, first of all, I was born and raised in Inman, South Carolina, from the upstate. Graduated from Chapman High School there, went to Wofford College, got my BA degrees from Converse College, and picked up a doctorate at USC in Columbia. Lost my mind, went to the big city, a lot of concrete. Well, asphalt down there.
Why did you decide to do all this?
You know, I grew up extremely poor in Inman. My parents worked very hard to take care of my brothers, sisters, and I. There are six of us total. My maternal grandmother lived in the home. And my mother always said to us that we could do better. And just looking at the big world of Inman and Spartanburg, and every now and then on occasion getting the opportunity to travel to Columbia as a kid, I thought I want to do more than what I saw around me. In the summertime, I would have to pick peaches, and I began that practice at like 11 years old. Then I went to work at a little grocery in Inman called Dan's Foodland. Enjoyed those that experience, but just felt there was more to do and decided to do it.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. You know, one of the things in reading over your bio here, I understand that you didn't have people in the home teaching you how to read.
No, that's correct, and that concerns me today in particular when we have kids who have been in school if they're disadvantaged. I never was told I was disadvantaged. I was never told that I was poor. I did find out I was poor once I attended Wofford. I understood full well.
I bet you did.
Yeah, I understood full well I was poor. But no one told me, Gary, you know, you're not supposed to be able to read or write or walk because you're poor. And did not go to kindergarten, but went to first grade reading. And as I said earlier, my parents didn't read to me because they were out working. What concerns me today, Ann, is that now if you're disadvantaged, you're probably in a four-year-old program. If you're really poor, mm-hmm. you're probably in a three-year-old program. And then we give a kid what is called a readiness test. But it's really a not readiness test, because if you're ready to go to school, then your parents have to take you home because they have to find a private entity for you. If you're not ready, once they give you the readiness test, but they tell your parents you are ready, but you're really not ready,
yes.
Then they put you in a not ready curriculum and tell your parents we'll have them ready. 5 years later,
it is
confusing to me too. 5 years later, if you're in the four-year-old program, or 6 years later, if you're in the three-year-old program, you may be able to read or you may not be able to read. Now think about this: a kid who exits third grade, having been in a four-year-old kindergarten program, preschool program, has been in school 5 years. A kid that starts in a three-year-old program when they exit third grade, they've been in school 6 years. My 6 year in school, I was in sixth grade.
Right.
These kids still can't read. It's not a problem with the teacher or the kid. The system is broken because we don't allow teachers to control their classroom and to teach. And we really need to get back to letting teachers do their job. Now, I propose this. One of my priorities is to make sure that we say that preschool and kindergarten are places designed to get kids ready to read by the time they're in the first grade or reading. Some people have told me, well, Gary, that's not really appropriate. Then I say to them, if that's not appropriate, then we need to completely defund preschool and kindergarten, because who wants to pay for glorified babysitting? It amazes me that we have not allowed teachers to really do their job. And I have, you know, personally a great nephew in that particular situation, and one of the directors of a daycare told me, well, Gary, I got good news and bad news for you. The good news is we're told to follow the child's lead. And I said, what does that mean? He said, that's the bad news. That means let them do what they want to do. And you and I both know, Ann, that children want to run, jump, right? They don't want to dress. They don't want to go use the restroom. So let them do what they want to do, I guess.
Right.
So that's why they are coming out not reading. And it just baffles me that we'll spend that kind of money on preschool programs and kindergarten programs and students still not be able to read when they leave third grade. And these kids are kids, for the most part, they have average or above average intelligence, but we let them do what they want to do. And guess what? They're going to do
what
they want to do.
I think society-wise, that's a big problem with society.
Exactly.
I mean, when somebody makes the comment that with the Affordable Care Act, that people will be able to do the jobs that they want to do because they won't have to do a job to be able to have insurance. They'll be actually have it. Where are we going with this?
And we're in trouble in this nation with political correctness. I tend not to be politically correct. I tell folk often when I speak, I know I'm not politically correct. Oftentimes I'm not grammatically correct, but I am right.
You're right.
but I'm right. And I think political correctness has gotten us to a place where we don't let teachers control or discipline their classrooms. Therefore, we can't. Therefore, they can't teach kids. We've gotten to a place where we do not say to kids, this is America and you should love America. And we have groups of people in our country that for some reason don't love America. Political correctness has given us common core, and that thinking in common core that America is just a self-absorbed, racist nation all about itself. But we're an exceptional nation, and folk need to understand, and our young people need to understand that political correctness has really gotten us in trouble in this nation, and the public school system, I believe, has bought into political correctness. Well, not our teachers, but the system itself, where we let everything go, we let everything happen, and at the end of the day, we want to blame teachers or say by evaluating a teacher, we'll make the system better. No, we have to correct the system. We have to make sure that teachers are allowed to control their classrooms and teach. Otherwise, we're in big trouble in this country. And I hope we can pull ourselves out of the hole.
Well, we have got to start somewhere with this. And when we come back, I want to discuss what you were talking about in a debate last night that goes to this point. He made the comment that I just got to ask him more about. You know, they don't give him very much time in this debate to talk. So we have the time to talk. But he made the comment that, you know, if he didn't have any federal interference or state interference, maybe even local, that he could take a school anywhere in the state, take any of the teachers, and turn the school around. Are you interested? Stay right with us. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
That's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. I am talking with Republican candidate Gary Burgess for South Carolina Superintendent of Education. And we're going to talk a little bit about a comment he made in the debate. And by the way, I do know you can actually go back and see that debate on ETV.com. Go to that website and you can see the whole debate. Or you can just listen and be part of the conversation right here on WCRS. But, Gary, last night you made the comment about how you could turn around a school anywhere in this state. Poor school, doesn't matter. You could turn it around. I'd like for you to discuss that again tonight.
And I'm the only candidate in the race, Democrat or Republican, that has actually worked as a school principal or superintendent to turn schools around. One school in particular was on the state's 100 worst schools list. We set the platform for that school to become a national model. It's now a national blue ribbon school. Another school was in the bottom 5% of math scores and English scores in the state. And we were able to turn that school around. Interesting enough, folks said, well, if we had your demographic population, we could do the same thing. But it was kids from the Mill Village, kids from a rural area of upstate South Carolina. And here's what I mean.
Well, then how did it get on the worst list to begin with? I mean, right?
Right, because of test scores.
Right, okay.
Basically, it was on that worst list, and that was a turnaround. But here's what I mean. Oftentimes, in the school that I personally worked at as a principal, there were things that we did that did not involve the district office. I did not get permission, and I thought, well, either I get fired
You're in trouble now.
Or get permission. And here's one of those things. Stop your ears up, superintendents. But here's one of those things that we did. I did not require, after my second week on the job at that school, teachers to turn in lesson plans as such, because I was tired of reading fiction.
How do you fiction? Okay.
How do you know on this Friday what you're going to be doing next Friday? So I require that they simply give me a historical document at the end of each week. When the assistant principals and I went into the classroom, we were looking for an objective on the board. What is it that you're going to accomplish today? So we stopped the nonsense of lesson plans. Yes, you need to know where you're going, but lesson plans didn't help with that. Pacing guides and other things might help with that. When it came to evaluation, I knew it was simply a paper play. Mm-hmm. And I said to those teachers, again, at this school, don't try to outsmart me. I do not like the evaluation system. I know you don't like it. But I am going to be evaluated by my superintendent. When he comes to evaluate me, he's going to look for my paper mm-hmm. and my file. So this is what I need from you. Don't go through any great lengths. This is what I need. Don't even discuss it. But I can guarantee you this, nobody will fail the evaluation. Somebody said, wow, what do you mean nobody will fail the evaluation? Because evaluations, as they are designed, are simply designed to get paper, not to improve instruction. Assessment improves instruction. And the teachers that were really lousy teachers, they are lousy in other things as well. So a evaluation as such does not help. So we stopped that silliness as well. The school is organized into teaching teams, and the teachers made the decision as to what happened with a kid. Let's say, Ann, you and I had a group of 60 kids, and you taught math and science, and I taught English and social studies. We would make the decision what happened to those kids during their instructional day. We got rid of the bells in that school other than the beginning bell at the beginning of the day and the ending bell at the end of the day. You and I would decide, is Johnny ready to go to English? And if he wasn't, then I would say to you, Ann, may I keep Johnny another 50 minutes, or I need him the rest of the day? And you would say, basically, yes, Gary, you can do that. The only places those kids had to be on time was to lunch and to the exploratory classes. Someone asked me, well, when a parent would come to get a kid, if they're in a four-member team, how will you know where that kid is? So we wouldn't. We'll simply call down to the team leader and say, I need to know where Johnny is, and then we'll send Johnny up. But that school made a dramatic turnaround because teachers were involved in making minute-to-minute decisions as to what happened to kids. I was at a South Carolina school board's meeting, was talking to one of the lawyers with the school board, and he asked me when I told him this story, well, Gary, did you get a waiver to do that? And I laughed, and what do you mean a waiver? I would still be trying to get a waiver 12 years later. No, I did not get a waiver, and I didn't ask. I was hired as principal. The teachers were hired as the expert in their subject matter, and we simply made decisions.
Right, but, you made decisions? You made decisions on your own.
Exactly. And in the long run, the superintendent never told me he wanted to pat me on the finest school. He never hired me to say, turn this into a national blue ribbon school. But I found out that was one of his goals, is for, before he retired, he wanted a national blue ribbon school and a Palmetto's finest school. I found that out inadvertently. But had we ran everything by the district office, had we did everything like the State Department or the General Assembly wanted us to have to do, if we had done what Washington wanted us to do, we would still be, and that school would still have been a failing school. So you have to take initiative. And that's why I say, give me any teacher, anywhere, the right number, regardless of where they graduated from, regardless of their evaluation, Let us work together, and we will turn any school around in the state. The problem, man, is that once you turn schools around like they're doing in New York with the Success Academy charter schools that the liberal mayor de Blasio is trying to close down because it saves the state $5,000 per kid, once it begins to work, then you kill the beast. And the beast are lobbyists, special interests, and lawyers that are making millions of dollars off the backs of children of color, children of poverty, and teachers saying we're going to solve a problem. They're not interested in solving a problem. They're interested in making money. It scares the establishment when a problem is solved because that drives up the money and they can no longer satisfy the beast.
Wow. That sounds like a novel concept. So did you get fired?
Did not get fired, but I moved on. I was offered a job as a high school principal. I always wanted to be a high school principal, so left there and became a principal of a high school. But it was the most enjoyable time I had working with teachers and parents and kids. I have kids now that call me back who graduated from that school, Yale graduate kids who went on to technical school, and some of those kids are millionaires now because they actually are making money. Some of the kids, a lot of the kids went on to technical school and colleges after they graduated from Burns High School. So we had a good time. And some of the kids, in fact, had a kid that emailed me, Facebooked me 2 nights ago, saying, I did not get you as a principal, but I want to thank you for helping my troubled brother. He is successful now because of you. And that means a lot.
Absolutely. And, you know, we are supposed to be teaching critical thinking. You
Correct.
Know, we have a society that is changing. It's not going to be the same. We're going to have kids that are going to be in school forever.
Exactly.
You know, going back to school to be able to update their skills and whatnot. And I understand that one of the things we need to have our children, the availability to be able to think and to learn.
I am certain that's our job in the public traditional school system, but then as you know, there are folk on the other side of the aisle that are saying we need to get kids from birth so that we can indoctrinate them, don't let them think. Thinking is radical, thinking is revolutionary.
Yeah.
Thinking may cause people to say, why are we doing it this way rather than that way? And again, the establishment doesn't want that. We have regimented teaching to the point where we don't trust teachers to think. We've regimented learning to the point in the public schools that because teachers can't think, the kids can't think. But we really don't want principals to think. We don't want anyone to think because you may have an original idea.
Okay, well, who's doing the thinking then, Gary? I just need to know.
I think the thinking is coming from these liberal think tanks.
Tanks.
And from the federal government. Again, Common Core is an example of that. People ask me, well, why do you dislike Common Core? Well, it's an overreach of the federal government that we did not have to have in South Carolina. When you start thinking about it, our standards prior to Common Core were the third or second most rigorous in the United States. So we actually wore down our standards to get Common Core. And we
also
did
spent a lot of money getting ready to implement it just to find out we're not going to implement it.
Exactly. And we did that simply to get the money from the current administration to help our schools. But we only get like 6% of federal money from the federal government, but they control 100% of our decisions in South Carolina. And I don't know about you, Ann, I have not really seen that the Chicago City school system is really doing good. So I don't think we want Ernie Duncan type Chicago schools in South Carolina.
No. You know, the thing about it, when you look at schools back from the 50s, we had kids graduating and you know, they went out and did great things. And, you know, the whole society just seems to be crumbling under, I can't do anything. I can't make anything. I can't do anything. And it is that inspiration that you get from a teacher. Maybe you only had one teacher in junior high or whatever,
right,
but that teacher inspired you and you went on with life. And that's what we do need in our teachers. And we do need our teachers, as you said, to be able to teach. I think we also need our teachers to be able to discipline. This idea that just send Johnny out of the room here.
That's not good. If teachers cannot control their classroom, cannot discipline, they cannot teach Johnny. And you know that, and I know that. Johnny doesn't know that. And I don't think Johnny's parents know that because Johnny's parents were probably not disciplined because these parents now are so young.
Sure.
And that becomes an issue, but the school system knows, and the system knows that if you cannot control a child, if you cannot discipline a child, you cannot teach a child. And that's why, you know, I advocate getting back to allowing teachers to do their job. We have to give teachers rank and make sure that everyone knows that when you walk into this classroom, the teacher is in charge. I knew that when I was in school.
Absolutely. Hey, we're here with Gary Burgess. We are going to hear South Carolina news, and we'll be right back. If you've got a question, give us a call. 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
All right, we're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. We're talking politics this afternoon, and we are with Republican Gary Burgess, South Carolina, running for South Carolina Superintendent of Education. You know, Gary, I have to ask you something. I mean, you're a black guy, and you're a Republican. What's wrong with this picture?
Hey, and I'm coming back home. My great-grandfather was a Republican, and believe it or not, he was black.
He was?
And he worked in the mills in Inman and also on a business. I think it's simply time for people to understand that if they want to make progress, in particular in the United States, but also in South Carolina, to get beyond political correctness, take responsibility, personal, family, community, for ourselves and move forward. And the Republican Party and gives me that platform and allows me that voice. When I talk to my Democratic friends, they want me to say that everything's all right or give us a new social program or give us some more money. Money's not the issue. The issue is actually allowing folk to take responsibility, because once you do that and you get money, you'll keep money. But if somebody just gives you money, it's like when we were children, it runs straight through the hands, and you think that money falls out of the sky, and it really does not.
The money tree, yeah.
So you have to understand that, and we have to produce and simply not be consumers. And I think that's where we are in the public school system, is that kids have to know this is your job. You come to school, you come to work, come prepared to work, and we'll do all we can to make sure you get what you need.
But there does seem to be a double standard, though, as far as what we expect of our, I'll use our black, maybe our Hispanics, versus where we are with the white folk, for lack of a better way to say it, Gary.
Yeah, there is, and that double standard needs to go away. It needs to disappear. There has to be a high expectation for everyone. As I said earlier, I think I said earlier in the show, I've been talking so much, is that my first 4 years I went to all-black school. And they taught us pride in that school. They taught us hard work in that school. And I can remember Eunice Swindler now. Nobody's going to give you anything, my first grade teacher. You have to work for what
you want. I bet you had to dress decent, too.
Oh, no, I mean, yes. And it has to be yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. I remember even in church that if we didn't look quite right, our ladies that were over us would tell us, you know, you need to comb your hair. And they didn't say it like that. I'll just say it like they said it. They said, you need to comb your nappy hair. But that gave us an opportunity to know how to present ourselves when we went in public. That gave us an opportunity to be able to represent our parents well, our church well. You know, sitting here talking with you, people often ask me, you sound good when you speak. Where do you learn to speak? Do you get that from Walford? No, I got it from church. You had
the
to
church
speak.
Was an important part.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. You had to say a Christmas speech, an Easter speech. You had to read scripture. You couldn't walk into that building not prepared when it came to participation. And now we ask kids, do you want to sing on the choir? Do you want to read scripture? It's amazing to me how we've transformed. The kid will say no, and then people get upset with the kid. Well, there should be no options. I always told folk I had a drug problem when I was growing up, and they said, what do you mean a drug problem? Gary, you had a drug problem? Yes, my mother drugged me to church. She drugged me to school. I mean, and you had to perform.
And failure was not an option.
It really wasn't, because my grandmother who lived with us, she didn't know anything about ADHD or ADD. She called it BAD, and she took care of bad.
BAD. So what's the why have you decided that you want to take on this awesome responsibility of trying to change our schools and everything? I mean, couldn't you be happy just doing what you're doing?
I am happy doing what I am doing, but I also need an additional challenge. I think it's going to take bold and daring leadership to change teaching and learning in South Carolina for this generation of teachers and students, and I'm that person. I am a generation changer, as I was saying to you earlier during the break. I'm the first person in my family to go to college. I was the first person in my church to go to college. And from my opening that door, other generations of kids have followed in my footsteps. And we need that type person in the office. We also need someone that embodies, I think, the American dream. Grew up poor. If you were to talk to a lot of folk that knew me back then in school, they would probably say, we cannot believe that Gary Burgess is doing what he is doing now. But America's given me a lot of great opportunities. I've had a lot of great opportunities in South Carolina. I think all kids, kids of color, all kids, poor kids need to see and need to understand we can do likewise. So that puts me in a unique position as well. Simply say, enough is enough. We have to not only demand stuff of all kids, but we also have to allow our teachers to be able to discipline, control, and teach all kids. Today in our classroom, teachers back off, and because oftentimes, as you know, the majority of teachers in our classroom happen to be Caucasian, and that's not a bad thing. But when they discipline kids of color, oftentimes those kids say, you don't like me because I'm black, you don't like me because I'm brown. That simply is not true. I'm asking you to do something. You need to comply with what I ask you to do. But those teachers then back off because they're afraid they're going to be sued because somebody will say, well, you didn't speak in the right term to that young man. You didn't say the right thing.
The right tone.
And as I say, in my house, I have three children. They have different hues of skin. They have different interests, but they all live in my house, and I don't have to worry about being politically correct. When a kid walks into any teacher's classroom, that teacher assumes the role of parent, and that teacher ought not have to worry about minor, petty, silly, crazy stuff, such as, well, did I speak to little Johnny in the right tone? Did I say the right thing to little Susie? No. They're there to do a job, and they can't do their job as long as they have to worry about how they speak to a kid. In fact, in a school district, I'm told now that a teacher cannot tell her class or his class that I'm the boss, I'm in charge. And I'm thinking, wow.
That's a bad thing. Now, what about because this is a big debate going on out there, what about school choice and what about having the dollars follow the child?
There's a false premise when it comes to school choice that if you allow the dollar to follow the child, that poor schools will get poorer. The research does not suggest that. To be clear, I support school choice. I believe that the money to follow the child, there should be some mechanism to make sure that parents are able to get the money for their child. If they want to put their child in a different district, be it a public option or a private option. My definition of public education is this. I think it's kind of unique. Anywhere a kid gets a great education benefits the public. My oldest son attended the Governor's School in Greenville, a public school, but it was the best private school on public dollars, probably one of the best in the United States. I think it's one of the top 16 schools in the country. My brother sent his child to a religious school her first 8 years in school. I have a cousin who homeschools his kids and other family members that have kids virtually schooled.
Sure.
So they need to have an opportunity to either get a tax break because if you homeschool a kid, it costs, I guess in Greenwood County, probably $13,000 to send a kid to school. So if I homeschool that kid, I'm actually saving the school almost $13,000 per kid. Should I not get some type of credit? for that, because not only am I saving money for the school system, but I'm also then paying taxes to support the kids that are in school. So I support school choice. We simply need to figure out a mechanism where the federal government and the state government does not do this data mining and have all the data and harass parents because they're giving parents a dollar or $10 for a child.
Now, what about the federal government being involved in education in South Carolina?
You know, probably the worst thing that happened, and this happened my second year in college, was the creation of the federal agency called the Education Department. It needs to be abolished.
Abolished?
It needs to be abolished. When I talk to folk who are in Congress and some career civil servants, they tell me this amazes this is amazing to me, because I guess you get so much money, you don't know where the money goes, you can't keep it with that. They're probably losing billions of dollars a year in the Education Department because it's so large and so vast that they can't even keep up with the money. And it only gives us about 6% of our budget anyway. Our money's in our budget in the state, but they control 100% of our actions. It is South Carolina's money, and we need to accept the money, but we need to say, but this is how we're going to use the money, rather than them tell us how we're going to use the money, because it makes no sense for Washington to tell us how to use our own money. It makes really no sense for the General Assembly to tell Greenwood how Greenwood's going to use its money. The local school district and schools should be able to make that decision.
Absolutely. When we come back, I got a few more questions. I'm here with Gary Burgess, and he is a Republican candidate for South Carolina Superintendent of Education. Gary, do you have a website?
I do. It's burgessforsc.org. Burgessforsc.org. I will tell you, like the deacon of the First Baptist Church in one of my areas told me, and I won't call that church's name, he stood up and said, "I have good news and bad news for you. They're finishing their billing program." He said, "The good news is that we have the money to finish the program to build our fellowship hall." He said, "The bad news is in your pocket." So I'm telling you, Greenwood, send me some money. Burgessforsc.org.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment. Don't you go away.
Layaway. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Ah, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. I tell you what, a lot of people would like to know, Gary, how is your campaign going? How's the money flowing?
Well, listen, money is always an issue. The campaign is going great. It's good being able to meet people and talk with people, in particular coming to Greenwood and talking. But I would love for you to invest in my campaign. You can go to my website. That website, again, is Burgess, B-U-R-G-E-S-S, 4-F-O-R-S-C. .org, and there is a place you can make a donation. If you're not wanting to do it on a computer, you can mail a donation to Burgess for SC Superintendent. It's P.O. Box 696, Pendleton, 29670. Again, that's P.O. Box 696, Pendleton, 29670. And the website, again, is burgessforsc.org.
Now, do you have a telephone number that you give out if somebody would like to call you?
Yes, that number is 864-328-7343. Again, 864-328-7343.
There you go. Now, you know, one of the questions I've been asking everybody, because I find this highly interesting, is about a school that was in the news, I believe, last week, talking about they canceled an honor ceremony because all the kids weren't getting honors. I think I might know what your answer is, but I'm going to ask the question. What do you think, Gary?
I think that's ludicrous. That's ridiculous. That's the premise of America, the rugged individual. And there are times when we do come together as communities, but even with that, as individual communities, to push society forward. Wow, that I have not heard that, and I'd say wow.
Oh, yeah.
So no more football, no more baseball. In fact, even when you go on the job, regardless of where you work, there is benign, nice competition. Otherwise, we would not be working. The premise of capitalism in a democratic society is based on competition. And in my home, I give my children money from time to time based on competition with their grades. My gosh, I just can't even fathom that. My oldest son is a saxophonist, and he had to compete for a scholarship to go to college. My daughter, who's just well-rounded, smart as a whip like her mother and her grandmother, their band won state championship this morning, and she happens to be the triple job 2A state champion for South Carolina this year. My youngest son, kind of like his daddy, laid back, loves life, but he's a great football player in 10th grade. Competition, and that is amazing.
I thought it was amazing too, but it's kind of like all the soccer teams that give out trophies to everybody on the team.
Even if I understand this correctly, even in my understanding of scripture is that even though we all may have a little mansion in heaven, that there may be some of us that gets a little more than others of us, if I understand that.
Right.
I could be wrong. I don't.
You haven't been there yet.
I don't know. Jesus may even like a little competition.
Sure. That's what life is about.
Exactly. Exactly. Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm just, wow.
Well, I know. It wowed me, and I think that competition is good. I think that is one of the things in the school systems we've actually got away from in some areas because of not wanting everybody to compete. I mean, everybody competes, even if they don't admit it.
Well, exactly. I remember in high school, it's probably one reason why I do not think it takes more money to teach a kid to read. We had a thing at Chapman High School called Practical Psychology. 11th grade and 12th grade students would be in this class. The elementary school was about 200 yards from the high school. And when we signed up for practical psychology, we actually had to walk up the hill at the end of the day, near the end of our school day, sixth period, and tutor kids in fifth grade at the elementary school. But that tutoring, and even though we were going and volunteering, was to help that child become a better reader so they can compete.
Sure.
So the whole premise is about competition, regardless of where you are. And America's great because we're competitors. And not only are we great because we're competitors, but we're also altruistic. We are givers.
Absolutely.
Do want our neighbor to do well because we know two things, simply from a perspective of humanity and from our religious teaching, we know it's the right thing. We also know it's the right thing because if the neighbor's not doing well, then perhaps that will affect the entire neighborhood. So we don't want folk out there doing nefarious stuff. But on the other hand, we're not going to support the neighbor just to be supporting the neighbor. We can help teach the neighbor to fish so that the neighbor can help himself as well.
Competition. It's kind of like 47 million people being on food stamps.
Yes.
That's a travesty in our country.
It's a travesty, and apparently we don't demand anything of those people, and we have, in my opinion, and I'm saying we,
right?
America has led large groups of people to believe you can get something for nothing. And as a result, we have folk who have no incentive to work and to better themselves, and we have tricked them to believe that what they get from the government will sustain them, and it doesn't. It's simply enough to keep them fighting one another, keep them in trouble. We need to speak up and say enough is enough. And I think that I'm the candidate, as far as the public education system is concerned, to say that. As I was telling you earlier, and I talked to a lot of teachers. One of the best teachers I know, had I still been in that system, would be teaching my child, happens to be white female. And she called me about a month ago crying, saying that she had been placed on administrative leave. And I said, why in the world were you placed on administrative leave? And she said, well, I told this little black boy in my eighth grade class, if he didn't get his act together and pass these classes, he would not be playing football anymore. The parent complained to the principal. Principal complained to the superintendent. They labeled her a racist. And I'm thinking, no, Barbara. No. And they put her on administrative leave, and eventually she left the system, and I said, well, the kid won the battle, but he lost the war.
Yes.
He's a loser. And I cannot believe that the superintendent and principal would label my friend a racist. And as an African-American male, I'm going to stand up against that type of stuff. This is silliness. Unless people simply want to continue to go down the road and spend millions of dollars on programs that we know will not work unless we get control back over the classroom and let teachers do their job. That lady is one of the best teachers in the United States of America. We became a national blue ribbon school because of her input and the input of other teachers like her. I was just shocked. Just could not believe that would happen.
Well, I'm going to give you 2 minutes here to tell everybody why you should be the next superintendent of education here in South Carolina.
And as I said earlier, it's going to take bold and daring leadership to change this teaching and learning environment for this generation of teachers and learners. I think I'm that candidate, a generation changer, being the first person in my home and my church to go to a college, and other folk have followed in my footsteps. Born and raised in Inman, grew up dirt poor. As I said earlier, did not know I was dirt poor.
There is something to be said for that, isn't there?
There really is. You have to work. You know, yeah. If I tell my kids now, and I know I'm digressing, to get a doorstop, they look for something from Walmart. They don't know that a chair could be a doorstop, a rock could be a doorstop. I know all of that. But born and raised in Inman, got degrees from Wofford Commerce College, and have a doctorate from USC. I've worked as a school teacher at Dorman High School, assistant principal at Burns, principal at D.R. Hill Middle School, worked in the inner city school in Spartanburg 7, Whitlock Junior High School, principal of a high school, Pendleton High School, superintendent of schools, and now I serve on the Anderson County Board of Education. So I have a very unique perspective. Worked in some of the worst environments in the state, and with teachers and the help of others, turned those schools around. They're now national models, blue ribbon schools, Palmetto's finest schools. So
this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Go ahead.
So my background uniquely qualifies me for this particular position. There are a lot of great candidates running on the Republican ticket. We have to make sure we hire someone or vote someone in who has a fresh voice. If you vote for Washington, Washington will continue to control education in South Carolina. If you vote for an establishment candidate who's already there, status quo will prevail. If you vote for a lobbyist, you'll hear louder and louder sucking sound from your wallet and from your purse because they're going to want more and more and more of your money. I will not shrink from the fight. I will not run from the fight. I intend to have that target right on my chest, but I'm willing to work with anyone who is willing to allow teachers to control their classroom, anyone who will protect taxpayers, anyone who will demand that students are expected to do what they need to do in the classroom in order to carry our great republic forward. I will look at programs such as the Success Academy out of New York, programs such as the Hope Foundation, Failure's Not an Option program, the American Educational Consultants, as well as the program with PITSCO out of Pittsburgh, Kansas, with their synergistic systems. There are a lot of great models out there that we can use, but as the next...
Well, they cost a lot of money, though.
No. Okay. They will save us a lot of money, and we'll kill the beast that wants to continue to get our money. But as the next state superintendent, and I plan to amplify the voices of ordinary South Carolinians, say enough is enough. Let's let our teachers teach, and let's educate our young people. But I appreciate this opportunity.
Absolutely. It's been great to have you here. And, of course, we are talking with Republican Gary Burgess, South Carolina Superintendent of Education. Again, what's your website?
The website is burgessforsc.org. That's burgessforsc.org.
Thanks so much for coming out, Gary.
Thank you for having me today. I really appreciate it.
All right. That's going to do it for us. But don't go away. We're going to join the news, and then I've got another candidate that's a call in here. So stay right with us. I'm coming right back.